You're listening to Charlottesville's Podcasting Network. I'm Dan Gould. The senior statesmen of Virginia continue their tradition of showcasing candidates for local office with this, our first of a two-part series. This month, we'll hear from all four candidates for Charlottesville City Council. The decision goes to voters this November. The candidates spoke at the Wednesday, September 11th, 2013 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held at the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. The program was moderated by local radio host and historian Coy Barefoot. Mr. Barefoot is introduced by SSV President Sue Liberman.
You're not all here to hear me speak, so I'm not going to say much else other than to introduce our moderator today, Coy Barefoot. I'm sure all of you know Coy, if not personally. You certainly know his voice and his picture. Coy has a new home at station WCHV, which is 1260 AM and 1075 FM on your radio dial. He has a Sunday morning television program at 10:30 every week, and he's also on the radio from 4 to 6 o'clock Monday through Friday. So I'll let Coy talk about himself. One thing that you may or may not know, that Coy is the unofficial city historian for Charlottesville. I doubt that there are many people, if any, that know as much about Charlottesville and its history that he does. So, Coy, if you will take the mic. Thank you.
Good afternoon. All right, that television show is at 11:30. So I hope nobody wrote down 10:30. You can sleep in for a little bit. No problem at all. Well, there's CBS Sunday Morning, then Face the Nation, and then Inside Charlottesville. And that was the idea. Let's put together a block so that the people who are sitting there on Sunday morning and want to know what's going on in the world, what's going on in the country, and what's going on a little closer to home. So that's what we do there. So let me get my notes. Thank you, Sue, and thank you, Jim, and all the folks with the Senior Statesmen. It's always a privilege for me to get to participate in this forum, and I look forward to it every year. And I want to thank each one of you for being here on this day, which, of course, has new significance for this country and for all of Americans. Indeed, for free people anywhere, because of the events of 12 years ago. And I think one of the greatest and profoundest things we can do as free people on this day is to participate and engage in a democracy and to step forward as free citizens and ask questions of those who would intend to represent us in our government. And so I think we should all be proud of these people who are here, but also proud of everyone in this room for being here today. And thank you, and give yourselves a round of applause just for being here today. Thank you. So my responsibility, just so you know, my responsibility over the next 90 minutes is, it's the same thing I have in any radio interview or any television interview, and that's to help these people be heard, to be understood, to help you ask your questions and get them answered. So that's what we're going to do. And this is how it will work. We have cards that are being passed out. I would expect everyone who came today brought a question. That's your responsibility. That's the engagement part. You ask a question, get them passed in. They're going to be brought up to me. I'm going to go through them and try to keep them in an order, make sure we don't repeat. And I will ask the questions of the candidates on the stage. You can direct your questions to all four or to one in particular. That's how we'll do it. So, and we're going to start with some brief. Did you hear me say brief? I think they have just a few minutes each. Some brief opening remarks by the four candidates that are with us today. And these are the four candidates for Charlottesville City Council. The election is in November. There are two seats available. We have four candidates, two from each party. Republican and Democrat. And why don't we just begin here on my immediate left, and we'll move down to the end of the table. And we begin with Bob Fenwick, who is a Democratic candidate for Charlottesville City Council. Bob.
Thank you, Coy. Thanks for being here today. You know, it's great for me to sit up here and look out at the audience and see a lot of gray hair, because I know you've been through a lot, and this is just great participation on your part. As Coy said, I'm Bob Fenwick, Democratic candidate for City Council. I'm 68 years old, and a little bit of the personal information, I was educated at Georgetown University and got a Bachelor of Science in Physics. And to that, I added study in civil engineering and construction management at the George Washington School of Engineering, also in Washington, D.C. I was in the United States Army for about 7 years as an engineer, served a year in Vietnam in the Central Highlands as a combat engineer with the 4th Infantry Division. And that's where I got a lot of my engineering experience. I went through South America, Central America, and it was a very rich experience, and I learned a lot. I've lived in Charlottesville for almost 40 years, and I've lived here long enough that I can remember the drive-in theater where the Kroger now stands across from Kmart. And there used to be a Korean War fighter airplane in McIntyre Park that the kids climbed in. So I've been here a long time. I know the area. I think I know the people pretty well. And I'm very fortunate that we moved down here. I've got two boys, both of them in the United States Army, and both of them have served in Afghanistan. One is an engineer and one as an attorney. So I take a little pride, and my wife went to law school here. She was an attorney, that the boys, as kids grow up, sometimes you think you've lost them. And it's very nice that they both went into something that Victoria and I chose as career fields. I've been a small businessman. I have a sole proprietor construction contracting firm. I've met a payroll. I've had a crew of up to 12 people. I've managed multi-million-dollar contracts in the Corps of Engineers. And part of what my community service has been a member of Believers and Achievers, which is a peer support group for ex-felons. And when I talk to a group of ex-felons, say there's 10 of them out there, I know very well most of them are going to be going back into jail. But I figure it's worth 2 or 3 hours a week of my time if I can just keep one of them from going back in. And that's why I do this, because it's important that they are reintegrated into our society. If we lose one of the ex-felons, then we lose his family or her family. And then the kids are involved. So I think it's well worth my time to do something like it. Several months ago, part of being in small business is trying to encourage other people to either start their business or to understand business. About half of the men and women who work for me have gone on to form their own companies, and they've been very successful. So I'm a regular market goer, city market, on Saturday morning, and we saw a need for a service to help the shoppers that come down there carry their packages. And right across, about a block from City Market, is Friendship Court. And a lot of young fellas in there really don't have much to do. So we got the idea of bringing them over to City Market, and they would offer a service. And they wear bright yellow shirts, and it says Rick Shaw Cartage Service. And they're thrilled to do this. So if you go down to City Market and you see these young fellas, and I'm talking maybe this tall, maybe twice that tall, go up to them, and if you can't tip them, they'll do it for free, but they're thrilled, they're the center of attention, and it's part of my way of getting the message of small business out into the community. When I was growing up, I had that opportunity as a paper boy, but you can't do that anymore. So that's part of what my community or the public outreach is from my professional life. So I'm running to be a representative. And when I go to these forums, or even on the street, people stop me and ask, well, what would you do in a certain situation? And I understand the question, and I don't want to be disrespectful, but at some point I'll ask them, well, what do you want me to do? Because I think that's the key to our democratic system, that somebody will truly represent the people of the community. And in the city of Charlottesville, we do not have wards. We do not have political subdivisions. So a representative will represent the entire community. And to me, that means from the biggest developer down to the poorest person, wherever he or she may be in the city, because everybody in our community contributes, and it's important to understand that. So I'm looking forward to hearing your questions, and I hope I answer them. If you don't get an answer I won't dodge the question, but if you don't get the answer that you think you should get, please stop me on the way out, and I'll be happy to talk to you.
Thank you, Bob. Next is Mike Ferrugio. He is a Republican candidate for Charlottesville City Council. Mike.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for hosting this forum and for having us here. My name is Mike Ferrugio, and it was less than 2 weeks ago I concluded a 25-year career in law enforcement for the city of Charlottesville. I have worked the streets of Charlottesville and neighborhoods on foot, bicycle, car, and even Harley-Davidson motorcycle, and I've seen the city's problems. I've spoken to countless citizens, business owners, students, and various government employees, and I've heard their concerns and what they wish for the direction of the city. There isn't much about crime, public safety, or being a government employee that I haven't already experienced firsthand. As a public servant in law enforcement, I've worked patrol, investigations, community policing, traffic, and administrative roles for the past 4 years to include all of our policy and hiring. I know how these policies from City Council and from the city affect our residents. I want to put this knowledge and other experience from my life to work for you as one of your next city councilors. I have two children in our public schools. Jake and Emma are 11 and 13. They've gone to Jackson Via, Walker, and Buford. They've both benefited greatly from our school system that we have. In fact, it's interesting that when I go to school events, I actually bump into people who have children the same age as mine that I remember when they were teenagers and I used to walk or bike their communities. That's a pretty neat experience. I first became interested in city government through my service on our very active neighborhood association, the Fry Springs Neighborhood Association. There, I had various leadership roles until I was selected to serve on our planning commission. I learned how to make development work while respecting the heritage of our city. But it wasn't until I attended the Sorensen Institute for Political Leadership at the University of Virginia that I realized it was possible for someone like me to run for city council. And I thought the day might come in the future, but really what kind of pushed me over last year was when the rain tax came. When $5.8 million was shifted from our enterprise fund back to our general coffers, that money that was meant to be spent on repair and maintenance, it shocked me. Our council created a hole in our maintenance budget and filled it by creating a new tax. It's a tax that I call it a tax because it's something that everybody has to pay. You don't have an option, there are no way out. It's a regressive tax, and it raises the cost of living for the city of Charlottesville. If you're a nonprofit such as a church or the Salvation Army, you've got to make up the difference. If you're going to a shopping center, you have to pay the tax because of the increased rents in the shopping district. And if you're a homeowner or even a renter, you have to pay that tax because it's going to be passed down to the renters. And this is because what I believe is the past 15 years of City Council not managing our maintenance, our infrastructure, and our money correctly. While I've knocked on doors in our neighborhood, I've had other people ask me another question that could be a possible misuse of public money. Namely, why do we spend $14 million on a fire station when the county only spent $2 million? Some will fairly say this is like comparing apples to oranges, but I say apples and oranges are both still fruit. What makes it 700% more expensive? And why couldn't City Council just simply and directly explain where the money went? Perhaps the costs are justified. I've actually done some investigation into this on my own. But one thing that it lacks is enough redundancy in its power supply that if there was a natural disaster, it would be sure to have power. That's something that's unacceptable to me, and for $14 million, it surely should have been there, and that's not what a world-class city is to me. I can go on with numerous studies, endless delays, shifting tax dollars, and resolutions that have nothing to do with governing our city, but I'm here today to tell you that I'm ready, willing, and able, and I have the experience to work for you on day one without a break-in period. I ask for your support so that together we can all make Charlottesville a world-class city. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Next is Kristen Zekos. She is currently serving as the vice mayor for the city of Charlottesville and is a Democratic candidate for Charlottesville City Council. Kristen.
Thanks. Good afternoon. Thanks so much for inviting us all here to the Senior Center today. And for all the work that goes into producing an event like this. As Coy was saying, it's really important that people hear from the people who would govern them, and so I appreciate being able to be here. For those of you who may not know me, I'm Kristen Zekos. I am the Vice Mayor of Charlottesville, and I'm in my first term on City Council. My husband Joe and I have lived in Charlottesville for 19 years. We have two grown daughters, and we've had four foster kids, the last of whom is now a freshman at Radford. So right now we're down to two dogs and a cat. So I'm a reporter by training. I have a master's degree in journalism from Northwestern University, and I worked as a reporter for the Associated Press in Atlanta, and then for the Appalachian News Express in Eastern Kentucky before becoming editor of the regional journal, The Appalachian Reader. In Charlottesville, I've been a grant writer and administrator for several local nonprofits, the volunteer coordinator for the 2008 Obama campaign, and I'm currently a translations editor for an international translation agency. So the awkward part about running for re-election is that you have to brag a bit about what you've done. But there are several things that I've done that I'm very proud of. I've introduced the idea of the Our Town meetings, which brings council meetings to the neighborhoods, and the Youth Council to make sure that we are listening to the people affected by the decisions that we're making. The Downtown Ambassadors Program to make sure that people feel welcome and safe downtown. Paperless agendas for City Council and Planning Commission meetings to reduce costs and protect the environment. Language banning discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and sexual identity in the city, and the Human Rights Commission to formalize our commitment to equity and fairness. And participation in the City of Promise and other initiatives to help end generational poverty and give all our children a chance to thrive. I've led efforts to increase sustainable employment, to grow the city's stock of affordable housing in every neighborhood, to enhance public safety, to improve transit, to increase pedestrian and bicycle interconnectivity, to reduce dependence on fossil fuels, and to build alliances with county and university on issues that affect us all. I'm chair of the Regional Jail Authority Board, former chair of the Metropolitan Planning Organization, a member of the Executive Committee of Virginia First Cities, and vice chair of the National Council for Youth Education and Families. And I've traveled to Richmond to lobby against cuts in state funding for Charlottesville schools and fought to make sure our schools have the resources they need despite cuts in state and federal support. And I helped to negotiate a favorable cost share agreement with Albemarle County for the 50-year water supply plan, as well as state funding for the Belmont Bridge. But 4 years ago, when I was elected to City Council, I carried a vision that people had shared with me during my work on the Obama campaign, as we knocked on thousands of doors and asked people, what kind of change are you looking for? And what does hope mean to you? What I heard over and over was a vision of a city where all children, regardless of what street they live on or how much money their parents make, have a chance to be successful in school and life. A city where everyone can have a secure, warm, and affordable place to live. Where people feel safe and have the skills and opportunities to work in good jobs that provide an income that you can raise a family on. A city that's the center of a beautiful, thriving community, not divided by animosities between local governments, where locally owned businesses are the core of the economy, and where those businesses are supported and nurtured. A community that welcomes its prisoners home when they finish their sentences and honors the humanity and rights of all its citizens. I'm inspired every day by the confidence that the voters placed in me to help me achieve that vision, and I've worked hard in the past 4 years to see it realized. I took office just as the recession was being fully felt in Charlottesville. It could have been a time of retrenchment, but we've made it a time of progress and hope. Our downtown mall, whose businesses are almost all locally owned, is thriving. Our economic development office is responsive and creative, and we are one of the only AAA bond-rated cities in Virginia. We've added miles of sidewalks and bike lanes and parkland. We're seeing deteriorating housing renovated, new affordable housing constructed, people being trained for good jobs, neighborhoods being protected and strengthened. In our schools, the graduation rates have gone up, the achievement gap has gone down, and more kindergartners are entering school ready to learn. And new businesses are choosing to locate here, drawn by our investments in quality infrastructure and quality schools. But we're still short of achieving the vision described by the people I talk to every day, and that's why I'm running for re-election and joining forces with Bob Fenwick, whose commitment to the environment and experience in small business will provide a needed voice on council. We have a lot of work left to do, and I believe we're the people to see it get done, to come closer to reaching the potential that our city has to become truly a city of promise.
Kristen, thank you. And next up is Buddy Weber. He is a Republican candidate for Charlottesville City Council. Buddy.
Thank you, Coy, and it's a pleasure to be here. And as I look out over the audience, I don't see a lot of gray hair. I just see a lot of personal friends my own age, so appreciate the invitation. My name is Buddy Weber, and I've been a resident of Charlottesville and an active participant in my neighborhood and this community for the past 20 years. I graduated from the University of Virginia in 1968 with a degree in chemistry and a commission in the U.S. Navy. I served my country for the next 27 years as a Navy fighter pilot. Over the course of my career, I flew combat missions in Vietnam, graduated from the U.S. Navy Test Pilot School, earned a master's degree in systems management, served as a program analyst for the Secretary of the Navy, and was rewarded with three challenging command assignments, culminating in a tour as a professor of naval science right here at the University of Virginia. When I retired from the Navy in 1995, I turned in my faculty ID card, I picked up my student ID card, and immediately lost my parking place as I attended law school for the next 3 years. Since 1998, I have served this community as a court-appointed criminal defense attorney, advocating for many clients unable to afford critical legal services. I'm the only candidate here with actual hands-on executive leadership experience. I'm the only candidate with the analytical experience at the highest levels of government. And for the past 14 years, no candidate has done more to ensure equal justice for all, regardless of race or economic status, than myself. If elected, I can promise you that the buck will stop here. There'll be no more frivolous studies, no more kicking the can down the road. Every minute spent on resolutions involving state or national issues is a minute robbed from neighborhoods and the day-to-day concerns of our residents. Every person in this city deserves respect, not just the vocal few. My critique of city council has run broad and deep over the years, and I'll give you but two examples today. Exhibit A for what I consider to be wrong with the city council is their recent decision to offer the highest paid official in the city an additional month's pay to study a problem that city council does not have the courage to face itself. Charlottesville bills itself as a world-class city, but tell that to those who live in public housing. The Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority has been a troubled agency since its inception in 1954, and they recently received another failing grade from the Department of Housing and Urban Development. The city manager is now tasked to improve communications between the residents and the CRHA. Years of neglect by city council will not be solved by a mediator. They call it a bonus for meeting stretch objectives. It's a political stunt to kick the can down the road until after the election, after which nothing will be done. City Council needs to accept full responsibility for its failed public housing programs. Public housing residents deserve just as much respect as you and me. Exhibit B would be City Council's benign neglect of the deteriorating conditions on the downtown mall, the social, cultural, and economic heart and soul of Charlottesville. North downtown residents and businesses have been calling for action for years and provided City Council with their own evidence-based study. What did City Council do? They studied it further. Still no action. North downtown residents and business owners deserve as much respect as public housing residents and just as much respect as you and me. Elect me and I will bring some common sense leadership to City Council. Thank you.
Buddy, thank you very much. Whoever has the questions, feel free to bring them up. And if you have not, by a show of hands, how many of you have yet to ask a question and write it on a card? Let's get them in. I appreciate it, and thank you in advance for getting your questions down. I'll start us off with the first question and pick up on a note that Buddy raised, and I'd like to hear from each of our candidates regarding the thank you, John.
Appreciate it.
I'd like to hear from each of the candidates, and we can begin here with Bob again and just move down. Regarding the situation with public housing in the city of Charlottesville and the recent action that City Council took to empower and reward financially the city manager for addressing the problem, I'd like to get your thoughts on that, and I would also like to hear really plainly as possible and as candidly as possible, what do you see as the problem and the situation with public housing so that we can all understand it from your perspective? What do you see as a problem, and how do we begin to address the problem? And I'm not looking for a silver bullet fix here, but because I don't think there is one. But from your perspective, what's the problem, and how do we address it, Bob? Yeah, let's try to keep them all the responses within 3 minutes. Is that fair? Two to 3 minutes, and then we'll be able to have time for more questions.
Yeah,
thanks.
Just wave around 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Fair enough.
Well, let me just make a broad statement to sort of put it in context. You know, when we're having our private conversations at dinner parties or wherever, at the card games that go on here, wherever, a lot of people complain that some people are getting something for nothing, that some people are getting something for free. And what they're talking about usually is what's sometimes called the welfare queens, or people in subsidized housing, people who really have nothing. Now, I just wonder what would happen if we turned that around and the same amount of effort in that conversation was put into the bailouts that we give to bankers and to the Wall Street financiers, or to the people who have the power to turn to their attorney at a corporate board meeting and say, I don't like this law. Find me a way around it. So, I mean, just as a general setting of the table, we pay tax money and it comes back to us. And everybody pays money, whether it's tax money or sales tax or water tax, whatever it is. From the richest one of us in this room to the poorest, we all pay our government money, and it should come back to us in some way. And that's the real struggle that people have. And for a certain small group of individuals to sort of put the blame on the people in our community who can least afford it as sort of a straw dog, to me, just doesn't sound like basic fairness. So when we have this conversation, I would like to put it in that frame. Getting into the CRHA is an independent entity. And when you have a situation where an appointed body or an elected body is charged with a certain responsibility, and there's a difficulty carrying that mission out, many times it's not the process that is to blame, it's the people. In 45 years of business, I've run into the same thing. If there's a conflict, sometimes you have to change the people that are trying to solve the conflict. In our community, I don't think there is anything other than a medical problem that we can't solve. Probably in this room, there are retired professors. There are people who have spent a lifetime as consultants. There is a tremendous resource just in this room, and that goes to the people that volunteer for SCORE. That goes for your neighbors, probably. We can solve these problems. The key is to get the right people in place. And if there seems to be an intractable problem, then with my experience, if I had the power to do so, I would talk to the people involved, and if necessary, I would make the negotiators, I would change the negotiators.
Bob, thank you. Appreciate it. Mike, your thoughts?
Thank you very much. Well, I've been involved with public housing in Charlottesville for 25 years. I've spent a lot of time in them, in the units, walking foot patrol around them, talking to the people and helping the folks there. I think the problem stems back from when like, for example, West Haven was going to be built, when the first projects were going to be built, we had community leaders then saying that this is not a good idea. In fact, the NAACP said, we'll support public housing, we see a need for it, but we don't want it to be all concentrated in one area. Well, that's what they did anyway, and I'll let you in history be the judge of how well that's worked. So when you look at the city handling of that, the CRHA, it's obviously a very difficult problem, but what would I do to try to solve it? Clearly, public housing is going to be around for a while. It's going to be needed. It comes in two different forms. One is the actual public housing, where the city itself owns the units, and the other is in a form of Section 8 housing, which you have a voucher that you receive, but you can live in anybody else's unit so long as they'll accept Section 8 vouchers. We have a mix of both. There's 376 housing units in the city. So one of the things we've got to consider and grapple with is, do we want to own 376 units? Well, the immediate answer to that tends to be yes, because those units give the families that live in them a certain protection that you don't get in Section 8 housing. So that's an argument for keeping public housing the way we have it. However, the management of the public housing is the larger issue. I agree with Buddy that I disagree with assigning the city manager's office the responsibility to try to solve the problems that CHRA has not been able to solve in all of these years. One of the ideas that I would entertain is the idea that the CRHA itself become an office or a department in the city of Charlottesville, that the city manager would be responsible for all the departments in the city, including the public housing section, and that the city employees themselves would have to manage the CRHA or whatever name it would be after it was changed. That's one of the ways I would look at it. But key to all of this is the people, the human beings that live in those units. I've walked them, I've talked to them, I've been in them. They're terrible housing right now. I mean, none of us would want to live in them, yet we force folks to live in them. So taking their desires and needs into account into whatever decisions we make would have to be done as well.
Yeah. Mike, thank you very much. Kristen.
Hi. You know, I think that there's been a slight confusion here, that the CRHA, the Charlottesville Redevelopment and Housing Authority, is not a city agency. It's not something that the city has authority over. We do, however, have several places where we connect with them. They lease space from the City Hall, so they do have their offices at City Hall. They also contract with our legal department for an attorney to represent them as a board. But other than that, we appoint members to the CRHA, so we have a lot of influence over the CRHA, but we do not make decisions for them. And the reason that we've come to the juncture we're at now is the CRHA has been in disarray for many years, and at one point during that disarray, they came to the city, this was years ago, and asked to be taken over, and the city did take it over. It was two city managers ago. And ran the CRHA until things sort of stabilized, and then turned it back over to the board. And so recently, the board of CRHA has asked the city council to consider doing the same thing. And we are a little leery of taking it over, frankly. We recognize that it has been in disarray. Something needs to happen. It's going to cost a lot of taxpayer money for us to take it over. There will be no additional money from HUD, from the Federal Housing Authority or Housing Agency, which has been steadily cutting funding for public housing over the past 10 years. So, you know, it's gotten tighter and tighter, and now they're saying, now you do it. And so we want to be really sure before we make a move what it is we're doing. So we ask our city manager to really look at that. And as he was doing it, he realized that there were things that he could bring to that process. He's someone who's trusted by residents, trusted by staff, trusted by the board, trusted by council. And he's in a unique position to be able to talk to all those folks and possibly work out solutions, whether they be keeping the agency independent, making it kind of a trusteeship of the city, or actually making it a city department. So that is why this is something that's going to be a huge lift for him. It's not part of his daily kind of job duties, and it's something that he felt would be, you know, if he could fix this, if he can get it so that we have public housing where people are feeling heard, where people are feeling safe, where people are housed, where people can move through and move out so that other folks can move in, that'll be an incredible gain for our community. So for me, it's worth it to see if he can do that.
Kristen, thank you. Buddy, your perspective on the challenges, the issues with public housing, and your approach to the fix.
Sure. First of all, I would like to agree with Bob Fenwick that nobody wants to blame the residents for this, and I don't think anybody would attempt to do that. I would also agree with him that we've got a talented community here, and there's probably no problem we can't solve. I think if we get our heads together, we can solve it. The issue here, I think, has to do in part with our view of the CRHA. It is an independent agency, but it's a creature of City Council. And City Council created it. They've taken it over in the past, and they can take it over again. This is our community, and ultimately, as I said in my opening statement, City Council has to take responsibility for it. What is a problem here is and I'm just going to use one of the public housing areas as an example, because it's the biggest one. It's also the one that's been in the news, and that's West Haven. West Haven is a nice little community, by the way. I've been over there. There's people there. It's got its own little community sort of ecosystem that gets along, but the problem is that they're sort of isolated from West Main. They're isolated from the mainstream of economic life here, right here in Charlottesville, and they're feeling like the development along West Main is only going to make it worse. They're going to get walled off instead of integrated in. So what needs to happen is some people need to come in and ultimately take responsibility for the broad look of this thing and not just figure out what we're going to do with our housing. By the way, if anybody would like to take a tour of that housing, you'll see what we're talking about and what kind of conditions we're putting these people in to live. They're not the greatest of places, even though the community is nice. But they need to be integrated in. I think there's opportunities here to take some residents there, give them some job training, get them integrated in with a redevelopment community, opportunity for home ownership and long-term job security, and then integrate that whole community right in, not just along West Main, but into the mainstream of economic life. As a criminal defense attorney, I see these kids when it's too late. You know, by the time they get to me, there's all I can do is provide them my best effort to counsel them on how to turn their life around. I'd like to see that integrated earlier in and get them into the mainstream and stop the isolation. I think it's only City Council and only City Council along with the staff of the city that can do this. I don't have any problem with Maurice Jones or the city manager, the assistant city manager providing assistance. In fact, I've personally spoken to both of them, and I do agree that they have expertise to bear here. And it would probably be a good idea to bring the whole organization in as a department of the city. So I think we need to take a look at some of the structural issues involved with the management of public housing, but we also need to look at the future. What are we going to do with it? Is it a model that still works? Can we do better? Can we integrate the people, the real people that live there and their lives, can we integrate them into the mainstream of economic life right here in Charlottesville? I think we can do it.
There you go, Buddy. Thank you. It was fall of 1959 that the Parking and Transportation Committee of the Chamber of Commerce issued a request to Charlottesville City Council that they study an idea that chamber members had, and that was closing off Main Street, East Main Street, and turning it into a pedestrian mall. This was 1959. This was debated throughout the 1960s, and Charlottesville City Council rolled the dice in 1974 when they decided, okay, let's do it. Let's give this a try as one approach to saving downtown and ensuring that it would remain a place where people would want to live and do business. The downtown mall, the first portion opened in the summer of 1976. It has since expanded to the east, to the west, north, and south. I would like to hear from our candidates, and Buddy, we'll start with you this time and move down this way. And please, a couple of minutes each. The downtown mall. What are the issues with the downtown mall from your perspective and that you're hearing from folks when you knock on doors, and how should the city be approaching those challenges? Buddy?
Well, a couple things that I hear about the downtown. First of all, as I said, the downtown mall really is the social, cultural, and economic heart and soul of Charlottesville. It may not be the biggest money generator for the city, but it is certainly a place where people go. They go to eat, to conduct business, to just to be in a place that has the ambiance that reflects all of the history of Charlottesville right there, and we try to make it a family-friendly place. What I've heard from a lot of people is that they're beginning to sense that they're not as safe as they used to be, and that's a big issue. Because if people start staying away just because they don't feel safe walking there, say after dark or maybe it's on some of the side streets, then they're going to stay away. That takes away from the businesses that are there. But ultimately, it takes away from something that the community can be doing, which is, I mean, I think our principal goal is to provide for the safety of our residents and make sure that everybody feels like they can walk on the downtown mall before and after dark. So it's primarily a safety issue is what I'm sensing from a lot of people. And that was the gist of what the North Downtown study had concluded too, where they sent out surveys to lots of people and to determine, you know, what was it that was. Did they stop going to the mall, or did they find that the going to the mall was less frequent than before? And if so, when and why? That's what I hear. That's what was part of the report. I don't think there's anything that's really changed. I will say that over the last year, things have gotten somewhat better. There is I know the police department has responded in very positive ways to this, but I think this is an issue that still needs to get taken up with council, because it is we don't want to lose out. And by the way, you know, the downtown mall, for better or worse, is in competition with other places like Stonefield. We have to make sure that we can survive there.
Thank you, Kristen.
All right. Well, I think, yeah, we just recently had a work session on this, so it's been top of mind. One of the things that we did see in the study that the downtown or North Downtown neighbors and business folks did was when they surveyed people to ask if they were coming down to the mall, they did find people who were coming less because they felt unsafe. They found an equal number who were coming more because they were really enjoying it and thought it was great, and they found the vast majority of people were pretty stable in the amount that they came. So in reading down into those numbers, that piece to me isn't a crisis, and we see that the more and more people are coming on the downtown mall. I think that the actual need for safety as well as the need for a perception of safety are both very important. It's one of the reasons that I brought back from another city that I visited last year the idea of the downtown ambassadors to kind of augment the police department. You know, certainly we need police on the mall, we need them to be responsive, but the ambassadors are not only people who can welcome you and tell you, you know, how to get to Second Street, whether that's east or west, but they can also be a set of eyes and ears on the street to notice if something's going on, to call the police so that things don't get out of hand before they get there. We also have the problem of the half-built hotel in the middle. It's something that we're trying to, you know, I'm looking at whether it could be declared blight, because that dead zone in the middle of downtown is a place where people gather. There's no active business there, nothing's happening, and often we do end up with undesirable behavior there, and it's right in the middle of a place where a lot of people, you know, are affected by that. We also have seen the vacancy rate on the mall, which is the number of business places that are empty, go down. So, you know, businesses are thriving. Each business, you know, has just come through an incredible recession. So this, I don't underestimate the difficulty of staying in business, and especially when we have things like Stonefield and things coming in where there's lots of free parking and it's all new and shiny and everybody wants to see it. But I think that we really do have, you know, we need to constantly be aware of what the balance is. But I think that we are on the right track on the downtown mall.
Kristen, thank you, Mike.
Thank you. As you're hearing, we are all hearing the same thing, I'm sure. When I'm out walking the streets, knocking on doors, what I'm hearing is a security issue. That's the biggest thing, is security, security, security. They don't feel safe. They're not coming down there no more. They're going to go someplace else. The issue, the larger issue that I'd rather talk about is, what are we going to do about it? You know, if you look at history and you let history be the judge, you look at where it's been and where it's going, who's been in charge, and what's been done about it. And that's my biggest thing. The police department needs ordinances down there to be able to address the issues that are down there. and the police department needs to be down there a little bit more. We need to secure the mall so the businesses can thrive, so the businesses feel confident in the city government, and then we'll grow businesses down there. I think it is quite, it's that simple. The development will increase, and what I would do is try to increase the development onto Water Street, past Water Street to the railroad tracks and even over the railroad tracks. Give the city market a home and expand that area down there and massage the development of that area so that you see other areas developing as well. And I think mostly it's got to do with this management issue. Thank you.
Mike, thank you. Bob?
All right, I think first we ought to remember that the downtown City Mall of Charlottesville is one of the most successful downtown mall renovation projects in the country. There was a flurry of renovation of downtowns that were going downhill probably back in the 60s. And there were probably 60 to 70 cities around the country that turned their main street into a walkable mall. There is only a handful left. And what that tells me is as the problems have arisen, the city has taken steps to correct them. And it's a back and forth. It's a pendulum kind of thing. And I would ask you a question. Would you be more apt to go to the downtown mall for enjoyment if you saw a stronger police presence? Now, some of you might say yes, but I would applaud Kristen Zekos for her efforts to make it a little less obtrusive with the downtown ambassadors. The men and women who do this are there to help visitors, to just have a presence that these characters who will congregate wherever a lot of people congregate understand that they won't be tolerated past a certain point. Now, with this, we have a national discussion now about privacy and how much the government is intruding on us. Charlottesville has a reputation of treading lightly with civil rights. And I applaud that. But we all understand that there's a certain limit. And steps have been taken. There were benches in the central place that were a congregating place. Those were removed. I live about two blocks from the downtown mall and walk it every night. And I saw a noticeable drop in disturbances down there. So just remember that it's a very successful operation. The store owners down there, the merchants, are coming out, and some of them are still in, the worst recession this country has ever had. They are not in a very good mood. So they want action, and I understand it. But the actions are being taken. I was a member, and what I hear really also is increase the bureaucracy. Pay some more people to get down there and help us out. I was on the task force that Kristen mentioned, on the physical plant task force. It was mostly volunteer efforts of citizens to see what they could do to improve the downtown mall and keep it a destination point. So these things can be done, and it's a responsibility of the government to do them. And I'm very pleased with the downtown mall and what it produces for this city.
Bob, thank you. I appreciate it. Let's start with Mike this time. I'd like to hear your thoughts, and we'll move Mike, Kristen, Buddy, and then Bob. Your thoughts about the Charlottesville's new Human Rights Commission, which after years of debate and discussion, City Council adopted and created a brand new commission that is not unique to Virginia and was actually sanctioned by the General Assembly years ago, and they invited municipalities to do this. That will take complaints and seek to protect the civil liberties, not just people of color who feel like their rights have been violated because of their skin color, but the elderly who feel like their rights have been violated because of their age. And there's a list there. Mike, what are your thoughts on this Human Rights Commission? Did you support it? And now that it does exist, if you are on City Council, how do you see it moving forward?
Right. Thank you. Well, in walking around door to door and talking to folks, quite honestly, I'm hearing more people say to me that they worry about it than that it was a great idea. I understand the need for it completely in talking to folks in the community and the fears that they have, but the biggest violator that I'm hearing in the entire city is the city of Charlottesville, and they're exempt from it. The second largest violator I'm hearing is the University of Virginia, and they're not covered by it as well. So what I'm hearing more of is it's going to be not as practical as it could have been. Sure that there are state agencies and federal agencies that could have covered it, and they can still be complained to for the other agencies. But the largest problem that we have from the community that I'm hearing is the city, and they're exempt from it. So I don't understand how much help it's going to actually be. The fact that it's there now and it's in place, I'm not going to look to dismantle it. We'll monitor the program for years and see how it goes. Thank you.
Mike, thanks. Kristen?
I was very supportive of the Human Rights Commission and just wanted to go about the city being exempt. You know, the city and the university are the largest employers, so that it would make sense that there would be the most complaints about it. We are banned by state law from covering the university, or from covering the city of Charlottesville, and the University of Virginia technically is in the county, so that's why they're not. I wish they were, but I wish that we could cover every employer in the city. But what the reason that I support it was not so much because I wanted some draconian thing to beat up on city businesses, but because we already have people who are concerned, who are either feeling violations of their rights or complaining about it. And often what happens is either there's nowhere for them to go. The EEOC, the federal agency, is at a state level. You have to go to Richmond to do anything about it. And so everybody has the, whether it's the employer or the landlord, they all have to take up and go to another town and deal with it there with people that aren't familiar with the community. Whereas this way, we can do it here locally with people that we know and trust. We can usually end up in, if other communities are any indication, in mediation and resolution way before it comes to a kind of ruling of any sort. And so for me, it's a way to keep it from being so litigious, a way to make it more of a positive, and a way to resolve things before they become a big crisis, before they become a lawsuit. So I think that it's a real positive. There's nothing that we can enforce in a local local human rights commission that's not already state law. So we haven't changed anything. We're just making it local, and I think that that's important. We are the one thing that we wanted to make sure we weren't doing was being redundant. And so we have invited EEOC, and we now have a contract with them that they now come to Charlottesville. So the ones that they do cover, they can do here. And so even even the large employers where it can be adjudicated by the EEOC, we can do that in Charlottesville. So I think that overall it's a way of bringing justice home.
Kristen, thank you. Buddy?
Sure. it is an ordinance, and I'm certainly going to support it. I will say that prior to it becoming an ordinance here, I did consult with a member of the Board of Supervisors of Prince William County, who's had an ordinance like this for the past 20 years or so, and his statement to me was that it has turned out to be a fairly good thing for them, because it allows them to have a kind of honest dialogue and inform public policy going forward. He did caution that whoever is appointed to that board really needs to have some balance on it to make sure that true dialogue occurs. Dialogue, in my view, is listening to the other party with the intent to understand the other party, not with the intent to convince them that you're right. If everybody listens with the intent to understand, we can have real dialogue, and perhaps the Human Rights Commission can be a net benefit for the city. I certainly hope so. I'll certainly be looking for it. I deal in human rights in my business every day, and constitutional rights, those things that are protected. So I applaud our attempt to deal with some touchy issues. I hope it works. I think it will work if we make sure we have really good people on the commission. Keep an eye on it. Thank you.
Buddy, thank you. Bob, your thoughts?
Well, across our community, on almost a daily basis, small children put their hands on their heart and they end the Pledge of Allegiance with liberty and justice for all. There was a large portion, and there still is a large portion, of the citizens of Charlottesville who felt they were not getting justice. And this was part of what they were feeling was Vinegar Hill, the aftermath of Vinegar Hill, where a community was bulldozed. Now, I grew up in Southeast DC in a pretty rough neighborhood. I lived in houses I see the same kind of structures at West Haven. It was rough then, and it's rougher now. And these people live in these houses. In many cases, they were probably not as bad as some of the houses I've renovated around town. And they lost their community. That land where their community was, where they raised their children, lay barren for 20 years, as if people were telling them, better nothing there than you. And that's the sentiment I get from many of the people in these neighborhoods. So we have a problem. We have a large portion of our community who feels that not getting justice. And I applaud the city council for taking actions to solve that problem. Will it be perfect? I don't know. But it's a solution. And we complain a lot about what government does not do for us and how they put things off. This is a situation where there is a problem, there has been a solution. I supported it from the very beginning, and I will do everything I can to make sure that it works.
Bob, thank you. When I teach my class on local history, one of the first things I tell people is if you really want to wrap your mind around the Charlottesville community, you need to appreciate that, like Gaul, all of Charlottesville is divided into three parts. There's a city, there's a university, and there's a county, and that is our community. So let me hear from each of the candidates. We'll begin with Kristen. Talk city-county relations, city-university of Virginia relations. What's working, what's not working? Okay. Kristen.
Well, you know, I think we often think about all of the ways that the city and the county and the university sort of clash or intersect. But I will say that what we hear when we go to Virginia Municipal League meetings and various meetings around the state is that Virginia and Albemarle County are one of the best pairings of city-county as far as how we work together and get along. So I like to remember that when we're in the middle of something that we're trying to work on. There are some things that are sort of written into state law about the ways that cities and counties are in Virginia that sort of invite conflict, not necessarily antagonistic conflict, but, you know, conflict of interest. One of them is in planning and transportation and development. On every transportation corridor that comes into the city from the county, every place where there's a cusp between us and them, we have choke points in traffic. When a development goes in the county, it doesn't necessarily take into account the transportation infrastructure on the city side. So we have Free Bridge, where things get choked up. We have 29, where things get choked up. And those are things that we have in the past several years really come together and worked on, and I'm really pleased at the way that the current Board of Supervisors and City Council have moved forward on things. I serve on the PAC, which is the planning organization for the city and the university and the county together, and we hash out those things a lot there, and I think it's very helpful. I think that at the state level, there are things that we do together that are important. We work with the MPO, the Regional Transportation Planning Organization, on, you know, transportation things, transit, and bike and pedestrian infrastructure as well, things that cross the borders of our three jurisdictions. So I think, you know, there's always things that we fuss and push, but I think that we really do work well together. It's not always, you know, let's get along from the beginning, but we usually manage to figure out something that will get us all what we need, and we need it's a matter of vigilance. We have to keep doing that.
Kristen, thank you. Buddy?
Yeah, that that last comment reminds me of, I think it was Winston Churchill who said that Americans can always be trusted to do the right thing after they've exhausted all of their possibilities first. And I think that somewhat summarizes our ultimate relations with the county. I think to understand the nature of the relationship, you have to understand a couple things. One is that state law has completely independent jurisdictions. They got completely independent tax bases, and we're the only state in the union that has that sort of local government law. We had for better part of two centuries had an annexation regime where the cities would manage urban areas and counties would manage rural areas, and we did that by annexing land from the county. Well, that sort of got outpaced in the latter part of the 20th century, and so we negotiated an agreement with the county called the Annexation and Revenue Sharing Agreement. It's like a peace treaty, but it works. You know, it works within the framework of a state law that provides for independent cities and counties. It does create tension. I know a couple years ago when the county attempted to undermine the funding for the schools by going after the composite index, and I opposed their effort to do that. I went on the radio and actually debated that issue against Rob Schilling. You know, I said the county's wrong to do this. It's undermining the agreement. We've got an agreement. You know, we have to cooperate with the county. Yeah, there is tension all the time, and ultimately I would think as long as we treat each other with the kind of respect and understand what the other jurisdiction, their interests are, I think we can bridge those differences. I will say that that being a thriving city actually aids in that process of cooperation. I mean, if the city were failing and we weren't able to compete, let's put competition in the who here. We got 10 square mile city versus a 730 square mile county. We're already at 4,300 people per square mile. They're at about 200 people per square mile. So the development opportunities in the county are vast. The development opportunities here are not as good, but as long as we're doing well and thriving within the confines of our 10 square miles, we can negotiate in good faith with the county, and they will negotiate in good faith with us. And I'm convinced that we can continue to do that.
Buddy, thank you very much. Bob, your thoughts?
Well, I believe the question was city, county, and the university. It's like a triumvirate, and we cannot be ignoring them when it comes to this. From a practical standpoint, if we were to combine Charlottesville and Albemarle and probably somewhat of UVA, that would mean at least 11 elected representatives, probably something like 15. And that, to me, sort of sounds like it's going to get a little unruly for our community. So sometimes this question comes up in the context of reversion, where we want to make the city part of the county and all that, and I always ask people, well, why not make West Virginia part of Virginia? It's unnecessary. There's different things that we like, and different things that the county likes. The county is more rural, the city is urban, and it's just two different sections. The university sometimes is just off by itself. They do what they want. They're bound more by state law than anything else. But in the main, we have a very good relationship with the other two. We have relationships for libraries, fire departments, transportation. The city bus line is now going out into the county, which I applaud, because recently I hired a young man and it took him an hour and a half to get from Fashion Square Mall to Fry's Spring, and that's just not acceptable. So we're doing pretty good. I would just keep making sure that everybody understands we are really one community. And like I said, we had a thing with Teresa Sullivan lately. The university has its own fights that we're not really involved in, where they're looking more to make the university a corporate entity rather than an educational entity. But we get along. I look out on this crowd here, I couldn't tell whose city, whose county. We are one people, and I just enjoy living here.
Thank you, Bob. Mike?
You mentioned city-county-university relations and not cooperations, and I think they're kind of two separate things, so I'm going to touch on a little bit of each. Relations are very good right now, but they could be better. Whenever you're going to negotiate or you're going to talk about something, some joint venture, all the agencies involved need to be able to have trust of each other and understand that people aren't going to come with some off-the-wall request or demand, and that they can trust the people that they're working with on the other side of the table. So that's something that's critical, and that's something that I'm going to be able to bring to the table. I've worked with many people from the university and the county already while I was on the Planning Commission, so it's nothing new to me. One idea that I think of, or a memory that I have, is when I was on the Planning Commission and the university was trying to put in the South Lawn Project. Well, the city had air rights over that. So there was concessions that the city was looking for from the university. And quite frankly, I think we could have got a little more sidewalks put on their side of the project over there. That was something that we talked about, we debated at the Planning Commission, and I think we could have gotten a little bit more. As far as cooperation is concerned, there's a lot of areas where we can cooperate now. Sadly, it seems like we're missing the mark on the fire departments. It looks like we're going to have two very expensive fire departments, one for the city and one for the county. I would have loved seeing that work out together. Police departments is another area. Very large overhead in these two agencies that potentially could be working together. Right now with Parks and Rec, we are cooperating very, very well together. With the buses, we are cooperating well together. So those are areas we need to expand upon. Ultimately, what the city needs to remember is that everything that we're doing is in direct competition with the county. I respect the county greatly, but like Bob said, I would like the county to concentrate on doing what counties do best and let the city concentrate on what cities do best, which is the density. We can have more density in the city than they can have in the county. And that's what I think there.
Good deal. Thank you, Mike. All right. We have about 20 minutes left, and I want to leave some time for some closing remarks briefly from our four candidates. So I would like to move on to what I call short answer. And we'll give each of you 30 seconds. And I promise you, you could talk for an hour about each one of these. But the challenge is just 30 seconds. Let's see if we can do each topic in a couple of minutes. And I'm just going to throw out a topic, and you have 30 seconds to share your thoughts. These are topics that are in the headlines, and it's things we think about and that we talk about as members of this community. Bob, we begin with you. Short answer. The proposed Western bypass on Route 29.
Well, that's a short bypass, that's for sure. My feeling is there's a lot of opposition to that, and we are being told by the state that that we have to put something in that the people don't want. I mean, what is there? This is a democracy. We have engineers in town here. We have transportation experts in town who say this is the wrong road in the wrong place at the wrong time. Why don't they listen to us in Richmond or up in D.C.? So it's my thrust is always listen to the people in the community. You're the ones that are paying the freight. You have the good ideas. And I oppose.
Bob, thanks. Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you. I'm not going to wade into Albemarle County's problems and arguments and discussions with their residents. But what I will say is the larger principle of the matter is we need to have a little bit more connector roads north and south and east and west. As any city resident knows, a lot of the county traffic has got to come directly through the city. So connector roads, whether they're an eastern bypass or a western bypass, something needs to be done to alleviate the traffic problems from making Charlottesville be the crossroads for traffic. Thank you.
Kristen.
I actually agree that something needs to be done. I think the Western Bypass isn't it, because it actually doesn't take much local traffic off of 29, and most traffic on 29 is local. The people going around, it saves them about 3 minutes for about $250 million. So as a taxpayer, I don't particularly like it. I was on the MPO when it came to us. I voted against it. At this point, the city doesn't actually have any control over what happens. It's a county and state issue.
Yeah, Buddy?
I think she's right. The city doesn't have any control over that. But I will say that several years ago, I remember the county had proposed realigning their schools so that many of the students that were going to school in the north were going to go to Monticello High School. And the only way to get from north to south is right through the heart of the city. So as a general principle, I'd like to see some roads that circumnavigate the city. I don't know whether this bypass is the right one, but that's not for me to say as a member of city council at this point. Thank you.
Okay. How about as a member of the community? I'm just trying to gauge. You support it or yes? You support it or you just don't know yet? No, just real quickly. I'm just curious.
I
don't mean to put you on the spot, we all appreciate the fact that City Council doesn't vote on the Western Bypass.
I'm sort of.
But we all live here too.
I'm ambivalent about it. I mean, I think I agree that it's probably too short. It's already gotten to the point where. Whereas it's not the bypass that we would build if we were going to redesign it today. But one of the problems we got around here is it takes 25, 30 years to get anything done. Look at the Meadow Creek Parkway.
Buddy, thank
1968.
You. All right, we're doing short answer. Buddy, let's stay with you. the homeless in Charlottesville?
By that, let me amend that.
I don't just mean the homeless. I mean homeless slash panhandling. Let me say that.
Homeless,
which are two separate things, I know, but they're often related.
Yeah, I think they are often related, but the homeless is a situation that obviously always has to be managed, and it has to be managed in a way that is safe for the people that are homeless, and in a position where they're non-threatening to the people that frequent the downtown area. With regard to panhandling, that's a little bit different. Panhandling is activity. Sometimes panhandling can be very threatening, just by virtue of the fact of approaching a person, making eye contact with them, asking them for something can be threatening to people. And I think that's the conduct is a little different than status. So,
buddy, thank you. Matters. Short answer, Kristen. Homeless and panhandling.
Yes, I actually worked and lived in a homeless shelter for 2 years as I came out of college, and so I often, think of people I knew then when I see folks now, and people who are homeless and even folks who are just panhandling are often, things have gone horribly wrong in their lives, and I think we can't forget that when we try to figure out how to ameliorate the impacts that they have on our city. I think that we are coming out of a recession. I think that nationally we have a lot more people who have dropped out of the bottom of the economy than we had before, and I'm really I think that we're doing some programs now to try to find services for folks and to be really clear about what behavior is not acceptable, so that I think that combination is the way to go.
Kristen, thank you. Mike?
Yeah, I would second what Kristen just said. I have personal friends whose children are homeless. I've got personal friends whose children were homeless and now they're not. So I've got intimate experience with this. I've also worked with the homeless and dealt with the homeless in many situations and panhandling. I think one thing that you might be looking for in an answer is the police do need to have an ordinance that respects the rights and the freedom of speech of others, that makes it illegal for certain forms of panhandling. That is something that we lack. That is something that you'll hear some people tell you is illegal and you cannot do it, but other communities do it and it is possible. So as far as the solution is concerned, is just the police need the tool to be able to say to people, hold on a second, you just can't do that.
Mike, thank you. Bob?
The panhandling situation is usually talked about in relation to the downtown mall, and it's a thin line between being too obtrusive and letting people have their civil rights. So remember, the downtown mall, one of the best in the country. There are steps being taken. There's a line people cannot cross. I volunteer at the Haven. Sometimes I hire some of these guys, but not all of them are. There's psychological problems, mental problems. There's more children showing up in these homeless shelters. And as we come out of this recession, we can't be throwing the baby out with the bathwater.
Bob, thank you. Short answer. We'll begin with Mike. West Main Street, and I'm thinking of development on West Main Street. For those of you who don't know, over the next few years, there are a number of new high-rise development projects. I can think of three off the top of my head that we will see rise on West Main Street, and that will do much to change the character of that link between the university and downtown. Mike?
Thank you. I'm going to comment on West Main Street, but also keep it in the back of your mind. I'm thinking of Cherry Avenue, and I'm thinking of Preston Avenue, and just in a slighter, smaller context. That's part of the answer. West Main Street is made for density. It shouldn't have skyscrapers that are making the communities behind them in the shade. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about smart growth. But growth on Main Street is an area where it's supposed to be, and that's where we need it to be. As development occurs on Main Street and the density increases, that's going to give us the economic engine to do many of the things that we all want to do on City Council, but we just can't do right now. So that density is going to be vitally important.
There you go. Kristen.
I agree. I think that we do need to pay attention to the impact of any development on the neighbors around it, and I think that right now there are some places where that's a concern. But West Main, exactly, that is what we're trying to do. And the fact that some of these are student housing developments specifically is going to really ease a lot of the pressure on the local neighborhoods around who have been having their housing subdivided and rented out to students, which can be very destabilizing for neighborhoods.
There you go. Buddy?
Yeah, let me say I agree with what Kristen just said about students. It's nice to have them right on West Main, or anybody living on West Main, where you can come out of your apartment and go left or right and maybe head to the downtown mall or UVA and get there in a pedestrian way. I will say that the West Main development, as I said before, we really need to integrate West Haven into that in some way. And if you think about what really happened back at Vinegar Hill, you know, many years ago, it wasn't just the fact that the community got raised, and just wasn't just the fact that we moved people around. There were 58 businesses that were displaced during that time frame too. So if there was a way to somehow integrate new entrepreneurship for that community in along West Main Street, I think we ought to be focusing on that as well.
Yeah. Bob?
I'd like everybody to remember that Business Association recently came out with the fact that there's more development going on now in our city and community, our community, than was going on during the height of the bubble, which burst about 2007, 2008. More development now than then. We have to be very careful. Most of us came down here and stayed because we like a small southern city, a charming little city. When it turns into Fairfax County or parts of Florida, with apologies to anybody from Florida, then we're heading in the wrong direction for Charlottesville. And the last thing is, you will hear development pays for itself. Never. If development paid for itself, why do they borrow money for schools and roads when we need the schools and the roads?
Bob, thank you. The last short answer here certainly deserves a much longer answer, but we are short on time. Buddy, we'll begin with you. And the topic is one of the biggest responsibilities on City Council, and that is our schools, public schools. Your short answer as to what works, what doesn't, and what you would do as a member of City Council?
Short answer is that for years we have spent one of the highest per student in the state and have achieved one of the lowest proficiencies in reading and math in the state. It's gotten better in the last few years. The elected school board seems to be working on that. The new superintendent is working on it. I want to make sure, as City Council, that the money that we spend on the schools gets into the classroom as opposed to administration. More of it into the classroom. Thank you.
Buddy, thank you. Kristen?
Well, over the past 5 years, we've seen 30% of our state funding to schools cut in Charlottesville. We've also seen in the sequester a lot of the money being cut to Title I programs, programs for the most vulnerable students. And I think that we, over the past about 7 years, the schools have cut about 50 positions, almost all of them administrative. And I don't think that there's anything left to cut unless we start closing elementary schools. And I think that the city has been very clear that's not what they want. So I think we need to make sure that we fund our schools.
There you go. Mike.
Thank you. First of all, we have an incredible school system. Our school system is phenomenal. My kids are involved in it. They are excelling. It's just a great system. My son is at Buford, and last year he was on a swim team and a baseball team in seventh grade. I would not cut any budget or any programming for the city schools. That's not interested in what I'm in doing. Buddy hit the nail on the head when he said the money does need to get to the classroom. The last thing I'll mention about it is housing policy. Housing policy directly impacts schools. If you have 1,000 or 100 kids that could be in the city schools but aren't for housing policy, if you've got families that are raising kids to get in the city, and I've seen this on my street 10 times, when the kids get to be 5 or 6 years old, they think the schools are not good, so they move to Albemarle County. That's hurting our school system, and that's an area I'd look at straight away.
Thank you, Mike. Bob?
Big fan of public housing. I'm a big fan of public education. Both my boys went to public schools from Burley Moran up to Charlottesville High School. They still go back and see their friends and their teachers when they come back to town. My judgment of the schools, all I have to do is stand outside one of the elementary or middle schools or whatever. The children come bursting out of that school, full of energy. They're sorry to see their friends go. The next morning, they're glad to see them coming back. The children are the true measure of whether our schools are a success. And when I look at them, I'm very satisfied.
Bob, thank you. We're going to hear some final short answer closing remarks in just a second, but let me just put a bow on this afternoon. Thank you all for being here. There's a reception following the closing remarks, and that will be in room C in just a few moments. And we'll celebrate the Senior Center's 22nd year, which is just amazing. And also thanks to the Senior Statesman of Virginia. It's seniorstatesman.org. That's the website. Please join up. They do fantastic forums for this city and terrific community leaders that are involved there. The next big event for local elections is coming up on October 9th when a forum just like this will be held here at the Senior Center, which will host the candidates for the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. We'll be here, and that date is October 9th. I think we can all agree that we are incredibly fortunate in the city to have these four to choose from. We don't have candidates taking pictures of themselves and sending them to God knows who. And, you know, we got it pretty good. We're pretty lucky and very fortunate. you won't have to respond to that. At any rate, I'd like to begin. Each of you has about a minute left on the clock here. We'll start with Bob and just move down to Buddy. And I'm just curious, I ask everyone this question who steps forward to run for office. On election day, what is it that you want people to keep in mind? We are all busy. We all have a million things to remember in any given day. On election day, when someone steps up to the voting booth for city council elections this year, what is it you want them to be keeping in mind? Bob.
That's a question, right?
That is a question, yeah. And closing remarks.
Okay. Well, it just happens that I was involved in an election where it was tied. When the first tally was made, it was tied. And people would come up to me later and say, I voted absentee, I got my neighbor to vote, so it does make a difference. And there's a gentleman sitting very close to me out in the audience who can testify to that. So please, your vote does count. I think this will be a close election. I'm looking for a spirited campaign, so please vote. Now, in campaigns, usually people say there's two issues that we should look at. One, are things going pretty good? Two, do we have to throw the bums out? So I would submit to you that Charlottesville City has been under good management for many years. We have several awards and acknowledgments. The best small city for working women, one of America's best intergenerational communities, small community for overall well-being, number one city to live in the country. The list goes on, and these are by reputable national rating firms. MetLife, Black Enterprise Magazine, Yahoo Real Estate, Gallup, places like that. Now, people might say, well, you know, 4, 5, 6 awards, that's terrific. Well, I have a list of a total of 66 awards in the recent years. And anybody is welcome to come up to me after this forum to make sure this is a bona fide list of awards and acknowledgments the city of Charlottesville has had in the recent past. So I'm looking forward to working with Kristen Zekos. I think she's done a marvelous job. She's stepped out front. I competed against Kristen 4 years ago, and I tried to rattle her. I couldn't rattle her. She's a strong, smart woman, and I'm looking forward to serving with her on the Charlottesville City Council.
Bob, thank you. Mike?
Thank you. Bob, you made me think of something there. Are things going pretty good, or should we throw the bums out? Well, first of all, I call nobody on city council a bum. Not at all. But are things going pretty good? That's a key question. And everywhere we go and every door we knock on, about 70% of the people are saying, you know, I'm not happy with the way things are. That's one of the things that prompted me to run. That and the fact that I can do this full-time after retiring is one of the things that pushed me forward. I think we do need a change. I think we do need diversity of thought on council. And I guess if I had to ask, what do I want people to think of when they go into the poll, is just that what we need in Charlottesville desperately is to have some diversity of thought on council. We need to have Buddy Weber and Mike Ferrugio sitting there making motions, having the motions seconded, and then having the discussions that the people of Charlottesville desire. That's what I'm hearing on the street, and that's what I want them to remember then, that if they put Buddy and I in office, we're going to be there to give them that divergent view, and that the 3 votes out of 5 are going to move forward the best idea for the city of Charlottesville. And I thank you very much.
Mike, thank you. Kristen?
I want to thank Bob for the shout-out, but I think that, you know, I too believe that we're on the right track. I think we do a lot of things very well. When my kids were growing up in Charlottesville, though, I noticed as they got older, as they went from this beautiful nest of Burnley Moran into the, you know, middle school and high school, that we almost had two worlds by the time they got to high school. We had the kids who came from affluence and the kids who didn't. And they were often heading in very different trajectories. And until we can really attack that, and we've made some progress toward that, and our superintendent is doing a really good job of looking at that, but until we can really give kids in this community whose parents may not have gone to college the hope that they can, kids whose parents may not have been able to hold a job for very long, the idea that they can and will, until we do that, we won't solve some of the long-term intractable problems that we've had. And I think that to do that, we need a council that can work together. And I think that to just, you know, in slight response here, to just elect somebody different so that they'll be different may not be a solution. I think if you look at the current city council, you probably couldn't find five more strong-willed people who have different opinions. But we're all committed to working well together as we move to really deal with some of these incredibly important issues. So I would ask you to vote for Democrats.
Kristen, thank you. And Buddy.
Yeah, thank you. When Mike and I first announced, the NBC 29 did an online poll, and it asked the citizens out there anonymously to vote on a question. And the question was, can Republicans win in the city of Charlottesville? And the answers were, no, it's a Democratic town, or yes, it's time for a change. And after about a week or so, the poll concluded that it was 60% said, yes, it's time for a change. That's not me talking to you and telling you about things that are wrong. That's not anybody standing up here telling you things are going along just great. It's the voters telling us that maybe it's time for a change. So on election day, you know, I've sat up here, now we've talked for an hour and a half. We're going to talk to a lot of voters between now and election day. On election day is not time for me to talk to you. It's time for you to talk to me. So I'm putting my hands, my fate in your hands, and I'm going to trust the voters to decide who the best candidates are. And I'll honor whatever you all say. Thank you.
Buddy, thank you. A big round of applause for our four candidates for Charlottesville City Council. And thank you all for being here today. Thank you to the Senior Center and to the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. Y'all have a wonderful afternoon. Thanks.
For the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, I'm Dan Gould.